The Pandavas retire timely. text number 11.
Yona jukopavane chadanam chakrishad.
Durvasasori rachitar chuttagra bhugya.
Shakanda shistam upayujhayutaschi lokim.
Chittam
amasta sarine vini magna sangha.
Yaha.
Yaha.
One who.
One
who.
Na.
Us.
Jugopa.
Gave protection. Vane.
Forest.
Hecha.
Getting in.
Duranta.
Dangerously.
Krichtat.
Trouble.
Durvashaha.
Atvasamuni.
Ari.
Enemy.
Rachitat.
Fabricated.
Fabricated by.
Achutta.
10,000.
Agravuk.
One who eats before.
Yaha.
That person.
Chakka
anashistam.
Remnants of foodstuff.
Upayujha. Having accepted.
Yataha.
Because.
Trilokim.
All the three worlds.
Trittam.
Satisfied.
Amamsa.
Thought within the mind.
Salile.
While in the water.
Vinimagna.
Sangaha.
All merged into the water.
Translation. During our exile, Devasamuni, who eats with his 10,000 disciples, intrigued with our enemies to put us in dangerous trouble. At that time, he, Lord Krishna, simply by accepting the remnants of food, saved us. By his accepting food thus, the assembly of Munis, while bathing in the river, felt sumptuously fed, and all the three worlds were also satisfied. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Durvasamuni, a powerful mystic Brahmana determined to observe the principles of religion with great vows and under strict austerities. His name is associated with many historical events, and it appears that the great mystic could be both easily satisfied and easily annoyed, like Lord Shiva. When he was satisfied, he could do tremendous good to the servitor. But if he was dissatisfied, he could bring about the greatest calamity. Kumari Kunti, at her father's house, used to minister all kinds of services to all great brahmanas, and being satisfied with her good reception, Devasamuni benedicted her with the power to call any demigod she desired. It is understood that he was a plenary incarnation of Lord Shiva, and thus he could be either easily satisfied or annoyed. He was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, and by Lord Shiva's order he accepted the priesthood of King Sataketu because of the king's performance of sacrifice for 100 years. Sometimes he used to visit the parliamentary assembly of the heavenly kingdom of Indradeva. He could travel in space by his great mystic powers. And it is understood that he travelled a great distance through space, even up to the Vaikuntha planets beyond material space. So, you know, this gives an idea of the power of divine communion. That not only could he travel through space, he could travel up to the Vaikuntha planets beyond material space. There's a, you know, a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti before. You know, you sometimes wonder how devotees or people who are not properly situated in Vajrayana service can go to Vaikuntha. Vishwanath Chakravarti before makes a comment in the third commentary that sometimes for the amusement of the residents of Vaikuntha, the Lord allows certain people to come. You know, they can't stay, but there's some amusement. You know. So he travelled all these long distances within 1 year, and during his quarrel with King Ambarish, the great devotee and emperor of the world. He had about 10,000 disciples, and wherever he visited and became a guest of the great Kshatriya kings, he used to be accompanied by a number of followers. Once he visited the house of Duryodhana, the enemy cousin of Maharaj Yudhisthira. So, of course, Yudhisthira didn't consider Duryodhana his enemy. Duryodhana considered Yudhisthira his enemy. Therefore, you know, Yudhisthira is one of the names of Yudhisthira is one who doesn't have an enemy. So, what's that name? What is it? Ajatashatru. Duryodhana was intelligent enough to satisfy the Brahmana by all means. And the great Rishi wanted to give some benediction to Duryodhana. So Duryodhana knew his mystic powers, and he knew also that the mystic Brahmana, if dissatisfied, could cause some havoc, and thus he designed to engage the Brahmana to show his wrath upon his enemy cousins, the Pandavas. So he made a plot against him. So when the Rishi wanted to award some benediction to Duryodhana, the latter wished that he should visit the house of Maharaj Yudhisthira, who was the eldest and chief amongst all his cousins. But by his request, he would go to him after he had finished his meals with Queen Draupadi. Duryodhana knew that after Draupadi's dinner, it would be impossible for Maharaj Yudhisthira to receive such a large number of Brahmana guests, and thus the Rishi would be annoyed and would create some trouble for his cousin Maharaj Yudhisthira. That was the plan of Duryodhana. Devasa Muni agreed to this proposal, and he approached the king in exile according to the plan of Duryodhana after the king and Draupadi had finished their meals. So, you know, you know, here Devasa Muni is playing with fire a little bit. You know, he's no fool, but you know, in the translation it says that Devasa Muni, who eats with 10,000 disciples, intrigued with our enemies. So, you know, he's sort of part of it, but, you know, he knows at the same time he's playing with fire here a little bit. So, but, you know, for him he feels it's just an innocent thing, I'm going there. So he agreed to the proposal, and he approached the king in exile according to the plan of Duryodhana after the king and Draupadi had finished their meals. On his arrival at the door of Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was at once well received, and the king requested him to finish his noontime religious rites in the river, for by that time the foodstuff will be prepared. Devasa Muni, along with his large number of disciples, went to take a bath in the river, and Narada Yudhisthira was in great anxiety about his guest. As long as Draupadi had not taken her meals, food could be served to any number of guests, but the Rishi, by the plan of Duryodhana, reached there after Draupadi had finished her meals. So this is, I found this interesting about Narada Yudhisthira as well, is that he was in great anxiety. Similarly with Arjuna, before the battle of Kurukshetra, we get a feel that devotees of the Lord are human, although they're great Vaishnavas, they're not lumps of stone who have no feelings. They can suffer anxiety and different things. Here he was in great anxiety, there was some fear and disturbance in his mind. That's not unnatural, even for great devotees. So, when the devotees are put into difficulty, they have an opportunity to recollect the Lord with rapt attention. So, Draupadi was thinking of Lord Krishna in that dangerous position, and the all-pervading Lord could at once know the dangerous position of his devotees. He therefore came there on the scene and asked Draupadi to give whatever food she may have in her stock. So, Krishna, we'll get to that later on, he was actually with Rukmini at that stage. He was actually with Rukmini in Dwarka. But he immediately understood Draupadi's prayer and just immediately appeared there. He therefore came on the scene and asked Draupadi to give whatever food she might have in her stock. On her being so requested by the Lord, Draupadi was sorrowful because the Supreme Lord asked her for some food and she was unable to supply it at that time. She said to the Lord that the mysterious dish which she had received from the sun god could supply any amount of food that she herself had not eaten. But on that day, she had already taken the meals and thus they were in danger. By expressing her difficulties, she began to cry. So even devotees cry. Before the Lord, as only a woman would do in such a position. That's just a comment there, my brother. I heard a funny comment by Prabhupada on that point the other day. In New Zealand there was a group of devotees who split from Islam. I think they became the Hare Krishnas. And Prabhupada wanted to invite them, to sit down and discuss what are the differences. And he said, it's the nature of women and children to argue amongst each other, but the men should sit down and discuss. Simple point. The Lord, however, asked Draupadi to bring up the cooking pot to see if there was any particle of foodstuff left. And on Draupadi doing so, the Lord found some particle of vegetable sticking to the pot. The Lord at once picked it up and ate it. After doing so, the Lord asked Draupadi to call for her guests, the company of Devasa. So, Bhima was sent to call them from the river, and Bhima said, "Why are you delaying, sirs? Come on, the food is ready for you." But the Brahmanas, because of Lord Krishna's accepting, a little particle of food felt sumptuously fed, even while they're in the water. They thought that since Narada Yudhisthira must have prepared many valuable dishes for them, and since they were not hungry and could not eat, the king would feel very sorry, so it was better not to go there. Thus they decided to go away. This incident proves the power of the Lord is the greatest mystic. This proves that the Lord is the greatest mystic, and therefore he is known as Yogeshwara. Another instruction is that every householder must offer food to the Lord, and the result will be that everyone, even a company of guests numbering 10,000, will be satisfied because the Lord's being satisfied, and that is the way of devotional service. It's a very nice story, and I thought I'd read just a few more details from the Mahabharata. So it's really the same story, just you know, some more details just to expand your understanding. So, you know, when did this happen? So this son, we take up Mahabharata, first part, chapter 22. The Pandavas left Hastinapur by the northern gate, accompanied by a number of servants. So, this appears to be when they were exiled. This is the beginning of their exile for 14 years. Was it 13 years in the last year was to be in Kivniya or something like that? So, of course, Duryodhana, you know, not satisfied that to exile, he came to harass him even in exile. That is the story. At dusk they arrived on the bank of Ganges and found the great banyan tree known as Pramana. They decided to spend the night there and thus dismounted their chariots and bathed in the Ganges. As darkness fell, the many Brahmins who had followed the brothers lit their sacred fires, which cast an orange glow into the blackness of the night. Those holy rishis sitting around the fire chanting Vedic mantras in melodic tones soothed the Pandavas. Surrounded by such self-realized souls, Yudhisthira and his brothers again shone resplendent like celestials in the heaven. In the morning, the brothers prepared to enter the forest. They sat before the sacred fire and offered prayers to the gods to invoke auspiciousness. They then asked the Brahmins to bless them and allow them to leave. Yudhisthira spoke sorrowfully, "We were robbed of our kingdom, wealth and everything else we possess. O best of men, we will not be able to maintain you as is our duty. In the forest we will have to subsist on fruits and wild roots. The forest is also filled with dangerous beasts and serpents. Please therefore return to Hastinapur. The suffering of Brahmanas can overwhelm even the gods, what to speak of ourselves. I do not wish to be the cause of your privations, O holy ones." The Brahmin's leader, Shonaka, replied, "O king, we will go with you. Do not be anxious about how we will survive. We shall procure our own food and take great delight in an ascetic life. By our prayers and meditations we shall do you good, and we shall keep you entertained with our recitations from the holy scriptures." "I do not doubt that it must be as you say," replied Yudhisthira. "I am always pleased to be in the company of Brahmins, but now I am destitute. My brothers are anguished on my account, and I see myself as reproachable. How shall I now see you, who do not deserve to suffer, subsist on food you procure yourself? Alas, fie on Dhritarashtra's wicked sons." The Yudhisthira sat and wept with his head in his hands. But you see, also, the devotees sometimes cry. In Indraprastha, he had maintained tens of thousands of Brahmins. Now he could not provide food for even a few. Seeing the king feeling so dejected, Shonaka consoled him by speaking to the Vedas. Shonaka explained how the root of suffering is attachment to matter. So he's speaking strong words to Yudhisthira. "One who has renounced attachment, even though living in the world, becomes free from evil passions and the suffering they produce." Shonaka told him that the desire for wealth and opulence, which could never be alleviated, is man's worst enemy. The highest happiness comes from contentment, while the struggle for wealth, fame, followers, and the association of loved ones is the cause of bondage and ultimately pain. So, you know, it's sort of an unusual instruction for Yudhisthira, almost like, you know, as if he's just somehow disturbed by his loss of wealth and what have you, and that's why he is lamenting. Therefore, O King, you should not covet anything, do not desire to accumulate wealth, even for the virtuous purposes. It is better never to have touched mud than to wash it off after being covered in it. If you wish to acquire virtue, then free yourself from all desires for wealth. And Yudhisthira was puzzled. O Rishi, I do not desire anything for myself. I only wish to have enough wealth to support the Brahmins. What use is there in leading a householder's life if he cannot cherish and support his dependents? So that's the duty of a householder. They must, they must support their dependents. It is not the duty of a householder to maintain both his family members and the Brahmins. Is it not the duty of a householder to maintain both his family members and the brahmacharis and renunciants? So too should a household welcome guests and travellers. This is said to be the path of religious merit. What is your opinion, a learned Brahmin? So this is a nice, we see here, one thing I noticed with the Mahabharata is that, you know, when there were discussions, philosophical discussions, so here Yudhisthira is making a very strong point. But he's not just saying, well, that's it, I'm not going to listen to you anymore. I made a strong point, now go on. What do you think? So he's open, you know, he's open-minded. Let's discuss back and forth. This is good. That's proper. Shalika explained that even pious men may be overpowered by desires when associating with the world and its enjoyable objects. Yudhisthira had already achieved success in his household of life. Now, without attachment or material desire, he should concentrate on his practice of yoga and austerity in order to attain full spiritual success. By his spiritual power, he would then be able to support the Brahmins. So this is a nice instruction. So Yudhisthira thanked the Rishi for his instructions, which he said he would follow. Then, still desiring to find the means by which he could maintain those ascetics who wished to accompany him into the forest, the king asked Donya's advice. Here's another nice instruction, within the Vedic principle. You know, we take some advice from, as much as we can derive from some of the Brahmins and devotees. If there is still some doubts or something to understand, we may then take advice from other devotees as far as they're able to give us, like that, gradually coming to the proper conclusion. You won't see in Vedic system that one person becomes the absolute authority for all things at all times. So he asked Damya's advice. Oh, great sage, I cannot abandon the Brahmins, but at the same time, I have no power to provide for them. What should I do? It's a dilemma which is not quite answered yet. Damya reflected on Yudhisthira's question for some minutes, and then he replied, long ago, all created beings were afflicted by hunger. Thereupon Surya took compassion upon them. Drawing up water with his rays, he stayed over the earth. Then the moon, by his cooling powers, converted the resultant vapors into clouds. Then rain fell, and by the combination of sun and rain, food was brought forth from the earth. Thus all beings are actually supported by the sun. Taking shelter of the sun god, O king, you will be able to fulfill your purposes. Damya explained to Yudhisthira how the great kings of the past had all protected and delivered their subjects by virtue of their own ascetic meditation and vows. The Pandava immediately understood, in order to secure the means to support the Brahmins, he should worship the sun god with an ascetic vow. Thus he asked the sage what means he should follow. Damya instructed Yudhisthira in the 108 names of the sun, as well as the Vedic prayers he should recite. Then Yudhisthira entered the Ganges, stood facing the sun and offered numerous prayers and worship to its deity. He took neither food nor water for several days and controlled his breathing through the process of pranayama. Renouncing sleep, the king continuously praised the sun god from the waters of the Ganges. 3 days later, the blazing sun god appeared before Yudhisthira and said, "I am pleased with your prayers and austerities, O king. You shall get all that you desire. I shall provide you with food for the 12 years of your exile in the forest." The god gave to Yudhisthira a large copper plate with the following instructions. When Panchali has cooked a meal, she should place the food on this dish. That food will then be inexhaustible in quantity until the time when she herself eats. You can thus feed any number of men from this plate, O king. The god then rose into the sky and vanished, adding, "You will regain your kingdom in 14 years from now." So, you know, then he gave some further understanding, you know, which is an interesting, you know, situation as well. That how is it that you know, these Pandavas, because a lot of materialistic people who read the Mahabharata and you know, the stories of the Puranas, which are related in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, quite often, for instance, I've heard people quote Yudhisthira, who had to visit hell, and you know, they consider it from a materialistic point of view that, you know, he was sinful. Because, you know, Yudhisthira wasn't a sinful person, but people take it like that. That, you know, oh, he. People consider Krishna was sinful, yeah, and therefore, you know, his family had to be vanquished. You know, once Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture, and a person in the audience, you know, started questioning the validity of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. You know, Arjuna, you know, is supposed to be this great, you know, devotee of Krishna and some saint, and we should follow his instructions. He is accepting Krishna as God, like this. And, you know, so he questioned, well, why is it that, you know, when he had to fight this battle, he was a Kshatriya, that he lamented like an ordinary fool? Of course, Prabhupada was furious. Oh, now he's going to criticize Arjuna publicly. Prabhupada's, you know, you could see, you know, the tone in his voice and the volume in his voice, you know, and he had this conversation. He explained that yes, it's natural for devotees to momentarily sometimes be overcome with you know, feelings of you know, distress or weakness. He said that the difference is that Arjuna overcome that and then performed his duty and surrendered to Krishna. That is the difference. It's not an unnatural situation. Therefore, you can't find fault. You know? And therefore, you know, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, even if one commits an abominable activity, you know, there are sometimes situations in, you know, so here he was questioning that Arjuna's activities were abominable, materialistic, not those of a great saint. But Krishna says, no, you know, if they're properly situated in their determination and devotional service, they're considered saintly. So, here also, you know, you would wonder that why is it that as soon as Draupadi was insulted, because that was yesterday's verse, of course, why didn't Krishna just immediately kill Duryodhana? Why did he allow the Pandavas to be banished to the forest for 14 years? And, you know, there are many reasons why Krishna sometimes allows his devotees to, you know, he doesn't immediately react when there are offences. You know, one thing I see in the Mahabharata is that, you know, we understand by allowing Duryodhana to fully manifest just how horrible he could be. You would think that he's banished these devotees for 14 years, they haven't done anything wrong.
they think, oh, he's a real bad man. No, he's going to persecute them even in banishment, you know. So Krishna allows us to really see the nature of Yudana. That's one thing why these things are sometimes, you know, extended for some people. What we also see is just the glory of the devotees. You know, just how much they're prepared to undergo and yet never be shaken for a second in their faith. Otherwise, you know, Hare Krishna just, you know, oh, there's some, you know, Krishna could have killed Duryodhana when they were children, and Duryodhana tried to kill Bhima then. But then we would not know the greatness of the Pandavas. We would not know the evil nature of Duryodhana to this full extent. Now, Krishna allows us to, you know, fully. We would also not know, you know, how amazing it is that the Pandavas achieve success, because Duryodhana, you know, his strength was immeasurable. And the other thing also is that, you know, Krishna gave a fitting punishment to Duryodhana, because, you know, a quick death was perhaps, you know, what Krishna did to Duryodhana was that he gradually took everything away from him. He allowed him to amass, you know, heaps of power and army and, you know, allies and so many things. And then he gradually took it away, piece by piece, piece by piece. That was a very slow death for Duryodhana. Even the way Duryodhana died, you know, at the end of the battle, it was a very excruciating, humiliating defeat. So, you know, there are many puzzling aspects to these stories, but, you know, it's worth looking at the details of them, because we can, you know, understand so much from these pastimes. So anyway, so the God, the Sun God, has risen up in the sky and said, "You will regain your kingdom in 14 years from now." So Yudhisthira came out of the river with a plate and took hold of Daumya's feet in worship. With great happiness, he embraced his brothers and then handed a mystical plate to Draupadi. She immediately cooked a meal and placed it upon the dish. After offering the food to the Lord with appropriate prayers, she served the Brahmins. To her amazement and delight, she saw that as she served in the plate, the food was immediately replenished. It was only when she took her own meal after serving her husband's that she saw the dish finally empty. When they had eaten, the Pandavas blessed the auspicious rites, obeyed the prayers, set out for the forest Kamyaka, accompanied by hundreds of Brahmins. So that's, you know, a little pastime there, describing, you know, how they acquired that plate. So, now this story continues a little bit in chapter 32, so just read this last a little bit. Duryodhana thought continuously of ways by which he may harm the Pandavas. So, you know, even they're gone in the forest, he's not finished. You know, he's consumed. He consulted with his brothers in Kana, trying to devise a means to overcome the Brahmanas before they return from the forest. So this is where we come into Devasa Muni. While he was considering different plans, the ascetic Devasa happened to visit the city. He had with him 10,000 disciples, and he came to the royal palace asking for food for all of them. The sage was famous for his anger. If he were not served properly, he would quickly curse the offender. He would also test his hosts to the limits of their patience, wanting to see if they adhered to their religious obligations under all circumstances. Fearing that his curse would be brought upon them by some incompetent servant, Duryodhana served Devasa personally with all the humility and gentleness he could muster. He carefully ministered to the sage's every quest, acting like a menial servant. Devasa was unpredictable. Sometimes he would demand that a meal be prepared immediately, but when it was fetched, he would go away and bathe. He would then return after a long time and say, "I will not eat now. I'm no longer hungry." He would rise at midnight and call for food and other attentions. often criticizing the food and service he received. Duryodhana served him without complaint and remained attentive to the rishi's every wish. Dubhasa was pleased with the prince. Just before leaving, he said, "You have served me well, I will grant you a boon. Ask for me whatever you desire. If it is not opposed to religion, I will satisfy you at once." Duryodhana felt as if he had received new life. He had already conferred with his counselors as to what boon he should request if Dubhasa should ask him. Thus he replied, "O Brahman, just as you have been my guest, so you should become the guest of Yudhisthira in the forest. He is accomplished and well behaved, and he is a great king, the best and eldest of our family. He therefore deserves to receive your blessings. You should go to him when his entire family has finished eating and are preparing to rest. You will then be well received by those pious men." Dubhasa replied, "I will do as you ask." He then left with his disciples, heading for the Kamyaka. You know, so it's an unusual request, you know. And Dubhasa sort of agreed to it. This is why Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam here, you know, that Dubhasa intrigued with our enemies. You know, he was part of it. Duryodhana punched the air in joy. The Pandavas would never be able to receive Dubhasa and his many disciples properly after Draupadi had eaten. They would have no way to feed 10,000 Brahmins with the magic plate they had received from Surya. Surely they would be cursed by Dubhasa, and a rishi's curse would never fail. Duryodhana ran to his friends. "Our plan has succeeded," he cried. "The Pandavas are doomed." He embraced Karna, who said, "By good fortune, you have fared well and fulfilled your desire. By good fortune, your enemies are cast into an ocean of misery, difficult to cross. Through their own fault, they now face great danger." Laughing and clasping each other's hands, Duryodhana and his counselors rejoice. Some days later, Dubhasa arrived at the Pandava camp just after Draupadi had eaten. Leading his disciples on the outskirts of the camp, he walked in alone and appeared before the brothers. They all immediately stood with joined palms. Seeing the famous rishi standing before them, they fell to the ground in respectful obeisance. Yudhisthira offered Dubhasa an excellent seat and worshipped him with all attention. Dubhasa then said, "I am here with my 10,000 disciples and we need to eat. We have been walking all day and are hungry. O King, please arrange for our food. We shall first take our bath and then return for the meal." Yudhisthira said, "So be it." And Dubhasa left for the river with his disciples. After he had gone, Yudhisthira expressed his alarm. How could he possibly feed that many people? Draupadi had already eaten, and the mystic plate would not yield more until morning. Yudhisthira asked his wife if she could do anything. Draupadi, who always thought of her husband's welfare, began to contemplate the problem. So of course, you know, that's a natural quality for women as well. Her only hope was prayer. The princess thought of Krishna and prayed, "O Krishna, Lord of the universe, O destroyer of your devotees' difficulties, O unlimited and all-powerful one, please hear my prayer." "You are the refuge of the helpless, the giver of endless boons to all beings." "You are the refuge of the helpless, the giver of endless boons to all beings, the unknowable and all-knowing Supreme Person. Kindly protect me. I seek your shelter, O Lord, as you formerly saved me from Dushyasharan in the assembly. Please save me now from all this difficulty." Krishna was in his palace at that time, lying on his bed with Rukmini. That mysterious person, whose movements are unknown to all, heard Draupadi's prayers. He
He immediately rose from his bed and, leaving his wife, ran from the palace. Within a few moments, he was standing before Draupadi, who fell at his feet with tears in her eyes. "Oh, Krishna, we face a great danger from Devasa's curse. What can be done?" Krishna smiled. "I will do whatever can be done, but I too am hungry. Please feed me first, and after that I shall do whatever is required." Ashamed, Draupadi replied, "My lord, the vessel given by the sun remains full until I have eaten. I recently took my meal and now will not give more food." "This is no time for joking," said Krishna. "Quickly fetch the vessel and show me." Draupadi brought the dish before Krishna and he examined it closely. In one corner he found a particle of rice and vegetables stuffed together, and he ate it at once, saying, "May Lord Hari, the soul of the universe, be satisfied with this food, and may the Lord of all sacrifices be pleased." Krishna then turned to Sahadeva and said, "Go quickly and bring the ascetics here and feed them." The Pandavas looked around fearfully. There was no sign of food, but they had faith that Krishna would not let them down. Sahadeva left the river to find Devasa and his disciples. At the river, the innocent Devasa was expecting Yudhisthira to have prepared a meal for him and all his followers, but suddenly he felt as if he had just consumed a large meal. He looked at his disciples. They too appeared full and were rubbing their stomachs and belching. Looking at each other, the ascetics realized that none of them felt like eating at all. Devasa said to his disciples, "We have uselessly made Yudhisthira prepare a meal for 10,000 men and done him a great wrong. Will not the Pandavas destroy us by looking upon us with angry eyes? O Brahmins, I know Yudhisthira to be possessed of great powers. He is devoted to the feet of Lord Hari, and I fear such men. They can consume us with their anger as fire can consume a bale of cotton. Let us therefore depart quickly from this place before they see us again." Although he was a powerful mystic yogi, Devasa knew that his power was nothing compared to that of those devoted to the Supreme Lord. He recalled a previous incident when he had upset another devotee of the Lord. At that time, because that was Ambarish, he had been placed in great difficulty and had almost lost his life. Without another word, Devasa came out of the river and walked swiftly away from the Pandavas' camp. His disciples fled away in all directions, keeping well clear of the Pandavas. When Sahadeva arrived at the river, he found no one there. A few water pots and pieces of clothing were lying around, but there was no sign of the ascetics. He searched around and came across other Brahmins and informed him that Devasa and his followers had left suddenly. Of course, you know, there are some minor detailed differences between, you know, the Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata. These pastimes were eternal pastimes, and they happen repeatedly in various yugas. So whilst Sahadeva went back to his brothers and gave them his report, Yudhisthira was worried. "The ascetics will come back in the dead of night and demand their meal," he said fearfully. "How can we escape from this great danger created by destiny?" Krishna smiled. "Oh, Yudhisthira, you need not fear. Devasa and his disciples have fled, afraid of your ascetic power. Those who are always virtuous need never fear danger. With your permission, I shall now return to my home." Yudhisthira replied, "O Krishna, as persons drowning in a vast ocean are saved by a boat, so we have been saved by you. Be pleased to go now as you desire." Krishna left, and the Pandavas surrounded the chaste wife, thanking her for her presence of mind in praying to Krishna. So Draupadi had saved them all. They discussed the incident among themselves. The incident seemed to have been arranged by the Kauravas. They worked out who was up to what. Fortunately, Krishna was always there to save them no matter what danger they faced. Thinking of their friend from Dwarka, the brothers entered their thatched cottages and rested for the night. So I'll just leave it there. It's a very nice pastime. If anyone has any questions or comments?
Yeah. I was just wondering how
Yeah, look, he almost made the same mistake twice, but you know, sort of came, you know, that's why, you know, that's why Krishna made such a, he punished him to the point where he almost got killed. Because sometimes there is a tendency to make the same mistake. So, you know, gradually that remembrance kicked in and he said, okay, that's, you know, all right, I've done this before. I can recall, you know, the suffering, you know, received previously. So sometimes, you know, Krishna is like that. I was listening to a tape on the way here this morning, and Srila Prabhupada was talking about how he wanted to mull Krishna Maharaj to preach in China, and you know, the Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj had studied all the books on China and what have you, in order to prepare a paper as to discuss with Prabhupada how they should approach, because, you know, it's a very difficult place to preach in. They had some, you know, contacts and some success, but Tamal Krishna Maharaj discussed how the leaders, you know, the sort of the ones in control, were, you know, practically impossible to approach. And Prabhupada said, don't bother. You know, don't bother. Don't waste your time. He said, in this world, you know, there are two types of rascals. There's the innocent rascals. An innocent rascal means that there's some enthusiasm to not be a rascal anymore. Like that. But Prabhupada described others as stubborn rascals. And he said, don't bother. And he said, for the stubborn rascal, there is only one way to correct them, and that is they have to be brought to ruin. That is, you know, like that. So, you know, Devasamuni, he was almost brought to ruin, because Krishna understood there is a certain stubbornness, and, you know, he almost made the same mistake. He, you can see there's some stubbornness. But because he was brought so close to ruin, that was what corrected him. Ordinary instructions of Krishna, you know, would not work. So, you know, it's a good question. Any other questions or comments on this?
You said you were saying more about Krishna than he was in Dwarka,
Rukmini. Do I want to say more about that?
Yeah.
I don't know more than that. It's, it's mentioned here in the Mahabharata, and it's mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti, the cause of his commentary. So, he was there at Dwarka with Rukmini, and when he heard the prayers, he just got up and ran out of the palace, and just within a few moments he was there. But, you know, Prabhupada's point at the end is, you know, sums that up, that this incident proves that the Lord is the greatest mystic, and therefore he is known as Yogasvara. You know, that's what we understand from that incident with Krishna. You know, a devotee understands that Krishna can be with them within a second whenever there's danger. They never feel that Krishna is not present. You know, within a second, Krishna is Yogeshwar. He can act. But that's the point that we're supposed to take from that. Yeah, that's the main.